private sector investments in Africa depend to a very large extent on how, you know, private sector businessmen and women perceive the business environment in each African country. And of course, interconnectedly across African countries as well, in the context of intra-African trade. So, you know, the kinds of leaders we elect determine to a large extent their aptitude or their stand or their body language towards the private sector. If you have leaders who understand how wealth is created by the private sector and who believe that the private sector should drive wealth creation, not the government. The government should provide an enabling environment and the right kind of policy framework. But the actual trading, buying and selling, industrialization, all those things, services, they're all delivered by private sector businesses, whether they're big corporations or whether they're small and medium enterprises. So if we have political leaders understanding that their first priority as leaders is to improve the quality of lives of their citizens, and that the way to improve the quality of life is to create an environment in which those citizens create wealth, then you have a very good outcome.
This past November, Professor, I interviewed Mr. J. Wendell Adit. I think he's your predecessor. He talked about the need for African governments to adopt a private sector bill of rights. Yes. What is the importance of this private sector bill of rights?
We are advocating that African leaders adopt a charter on a bill of rights for the private sector that has 24 specific rights, that if every African country adopts these rights, if it is adopted at the Assembly of Heads of States and Government of the African Union in February 2025 and applied in practice, will make the landscape for intra-African trade and investment very inviting indeed, and will help create wealth on the continent. Now, this Bill of Rights is a codification. It's like a charter. It's a commitment by governments to empower the private sector to really drive the African continental free trade area. And we have specific rights that we're asking them to agree to, such as the right to peace and security for business to be able to thrive. If you have conflicts going on in various African countries or between African countries, it's very disruptive for people to be able to do business in such an environment. Or if you have terrorists, you know, agents attacking sovereign states, rendering them partially failed states, poverty is the outcome, period. So guaranteeing security, peace, and stability is number one. We want them to commit to a taxation framework that is very simplified and avoids multiple taxes, which we know many SMEs in many African countries complain about. We want a legal system that works, where contracts are sanctified and the legal process is efficient. We want the private sector to be consulted, you know, when decisions or policies or regulations are made, so that those decisions can actually work. These are the practical things that make doing business in Africa very, very difficult.
What does it take for most African governments to adopt this Bill of Rights? And what are some of the hiccups to its adoption?
Well, first of all, what it will take is political will. That's the number one thing. Second is the understanding of how economies work, especially the African continental free trade area, which has the potential to increase Africa's GDP by almost $500 billion, you know, by 2035, and to take 30 million people out of poverty if we improve and increase trade between African countries, not just between Africa and the wider world, because that kind of trade has us in a weak position. So, you know, the more we trade within Africa, the more prosperity we can create for Africans.